the producer is the pressure that makes the diamond. I feel like you're given the stone in the rough and then the producer puts the pressure on and makes it like glisten.
Welcome to Series 3 of Greater Than 11%, a podcast whose aim is to educate, inspire, and demystify creative careers, all the meanwhile promoting some awesome women and non-binary folk. For episode 89, we're joined by producer Anthea Ajakum. Anthea is not only a producer, she is a creative dabbler, currently working as a production assistant at Iris Worldwide. She is also the founder and host of Poducate, a podcast exploring careers within the advertising and media sector, of which we are big fans of. You can find Poducate on all major podcast platforms. Whilst Anthea is still considered early career, through her proactively building her network, she's achieved some serious experience working with major advertising and cultural platforms, such as DNAD, where she was production assistant on the New Blood team. She worked for a couple of years with Pitch Magazine as a publishing and production assistant, and has been part of the team working on Guap's magazine's The Blacklist for 2 years in a row. In June 2020, when facing redundancy owing to the COVID pandemic, she took matters into her own hands when it coincided with the murder of George Floyd in America, which brought to the immediate surface the gross systemic racism that is embedded in the foundations of Western culture. Anthea's CEO sent an email to all staff in response to Floyd's death, detailing that their company, too, need to take action. She emailed the CEO directly to introduce herself, share her skills and contribution to the company. And as a result, she was found another role and retained her employment. Anthea, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that tenacious move. And it gives me great, great pleasure to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you. How exciting to be here. I've never done a podcast or anything like this, so I feel quite honoured.
What? You've never been a guest on a podcast?
No, only hosted.
Only hosting?
Only host, never the guest.
A first here, I love it. All right, I'm going to dive straight in, and I'm wondering if you can maybe just tell us a bit more about your career and how you've arrived to where you are today.
I fell into advertising by accident in the sense of I didn't really know that's what I was looking for, and I knew it was what I wanted to do once I found it. I always studied art and design and those sort of subjects when I was in school. So I carried through that through line all the way from GCSE level to A level. And then I went on to do a foundation course. I went to a school that was, it was a state school, but it was really good for like the arts department. So they were really good at like churning us out and getting us like in through that entire process that you do when you study those subjects. I was accepted into Ravensbourne and CCW, and which is Camberwell, Chelsea and Wimbledon. Under the UAL umbrella, they sort of merge all three of those unis, the foundation into one. I decided to go to Camberwell, Chelsea and Wimbledon and not Ravensbourne. And then when I got there, because when I used to do my projects in art and design is very broad. So it's pretty much everything on the entire, like, you know, art and design spectrum. My project would always be, I think the main thing I used to do was draw. That was sort of the main talent I had. But when you're putting together a project, you're doing every single part of it. So it's kind of hard to find what your passion or what your talent or what, you know, where you, the best part of putting together that project is. When I first started my foundation course, I thought I was going to specialize in fine art. And then I got to the fine art department and they were very into like the airy fairy. I mean, sorry, UAL, love them. They're great for many things, but I just think, you know, quite traditional. And it was literally fine art. It was, you know, trying to make me an expressive artist, but I knew I didn't want to be an artist. I'm quite a practical person. And like, I wanted to know how it was going to shape into a career. So I had a little bit of a panic attack at that stage. And I dropped out after 2 weeks. The tutor in graphic design asked me to come in, have a conversation. And I actually met up with them a few years back and they were saying, look at you now. I didn't think that you'd actually end up going on to do things because you seemed so panicked when you came here. But yeah, going back to that time, we had a conversation and he convinced me to come back. I ended up specializing in graphic design. And that was on the right route because, you know, it's branding, it's marketing, but it's also still quite, the way that they do it is still quite creative and it's also not specific and it's still very traditional. It's graphic design. It's not like anything else that you could spill out into in the world of advertising, media and all the different roles. So yeah, I think when you go into LinkedIn now, there's so many roles within the creative industry that there's really no way to study it when you're doing these very specific traditional disciplines at uni. So once I finished my foundation course and I had specialized in graphic design, I knew I wanted to do something, but I still didn't have my finger on the exact thing. So I decided not to go on to do a degree, because the only degree that they were sort of pushing us directly into is a graphic design degree. They weren't really talking about any other degrees that were available. There was sort of just, it was that natural flow of churning us out still happening. So I kind of wanted to go out there and discover things. So I didn't really know what the step was, but I knew it wasn't a degree, and I was kind of just hoping, I guess, for any opportunity, and wanted to grasp any opportunity that came along. I used to work at a bar in the evening. So I started working there when I was in sick form. And one of the bartenders there used to be, he was like an entrepreneur type. He had a few links within the advertising industry. He himself had just sort of come across some luck. And he was doing these different projects with people like Mediacom, Group M, which are media agencies. So through that, I was connected to a project called the Great British Diversity Experiment. And that was being hosted, well, the launch of it was being hosted at Google. There was a lady there, or in my team rather. So let me explain what that is. It's basically an experiment where they want to prove that diversity is better. So we had 200 people and they put us into 10 teams, and we were given a brief by Tesco to come up with a solution to food waste. And we were put into these teams of 10. One in my team was a lady who worked at Mullen Low. I had a conversation with her. She invited me along to do like a week's work experience with my friend. That was a struggle in itself, because they didn't really have space for us or interns, and it was back and forth and creating a portfolio and coming up with ideas and just having conversations and just hoping that something came out of it. So that was the first advertising industry work experience I ever did. And then from there I said, yeah, I found what it is. Before that, actually, though, I did do a graphic design internship for about a week, and that was also the result of working at the bar. I used to have a customer that would come in every Friday, and we just always talk. I think one day he asked me, so what is it you do? Whilst I was in sixth form, no, whilst I was in foundation, that throughout the entire year we're having conversations, and he kept sort of just building that conversation. And then we started emailing, and then eventually right after my foundation course, I did do like a week at a graphic design agency that was a really small agency. They had about 5 people that worked for them. And I remember basically not using that week very well and just feeling like, this is just not it. So I had the two things to compare. When I did the graphic design internship or work experience, I just thought, no. When I did the advertising one, I was like, yes.
That's amazing. And I love that. And I mentioned it obviously in the intro as well, like that whole networking. And you've talked about just meeting people when you're in sixth form or at foundation, when you're working at the bar, and then that leading to things. Like, networking gets such a dirty word. Like, it's like perceived as such a negative by so many people. And like, I'll say, you know, me included sometimes, because I'm more introverted. I hate going to big events. I'm much better with like a smaller group of people. But I just think, yeah, I mean, I've mentioned tenacious already, but that kind of also shows like you, even though you were unsure, you were always taking steps and like just open to conversation or opportunity. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I think if I could go back, I would love to show past me where those conversations lead up to, so that I could be more interested in having those conversations. I think that a lot of people in the world are extroverts, and sometimes they spot people who are more like me who are introverted, and they kind of force you to be in those spaces. So some of it has been being open at some stage, but also a level of it has been me being forced into those spaces, because naturally I wouldn't start the conversation with the customer and be like, hey, what do you do, you know? Whereas that's something that maybe I should have done more, and say, hi, what do you do, what do you do, because maybe I would have met somebody else. But luckily for me, because that people like that were just interested in me as a waitress and having these conversations while I'm bringing them their beer and just being like, what do you do, what are you interested in? Because I think I remember when he first asked me, I just thought, why are you asking me that, you know, the normal thing that you think, especially being a Londoner, like a proper Londoner, that's like, you know, you keep to yourself, don't talk to strangers. Yeah, I would tell my old self to be a bit more open to it. I understand it more now, and I'm developing that as I get older. But definitely to a level, I wanted it so bad that when I did see the opening, I went with it. So I might have not started the conversation, but I went with it and I didn't shut it down. You know?
I love that. Me too. I wish I could go back and tell my younger self a lot of things. But I mean, it's part of probably, and it's probably why you do a podcast as well, right? It's like, oh, I've learned these lessons, yeah. And I also want to be, you know, more diversity within the creative careers. I want people to know what jobs are out there to be able to find and stuff. So yeah, it kind of comes about in another way. Okay. You've kind of talked about making that decision not to go to university, which is really interesting. And I'm really interested in that fact as well, because I think a lot of people tend to go to university because they feel it's like you should do that. And it's actually seen as a kind of a negative if you don't, but I don't think, you know, it's for everyone. So I'm really curious as to kind of how you navigated that. Was there anything, I don't know, from your parents or from friends when you were like, actually after 2 weeks, like I'm out, like you mentioned, like you ran into your tutor who was like, oh, I didn't know what was going to happen to you. How did you manage that? Because it's a big decision to take, right?
Yeah, it definitely was a big decision. It was scary for me because I had always kind of felt praise within my creativity. So, like I said, I was doing it at GCSE and I felt very confident about it. And I would always get the best grades. And I think part of the reason I kind of wanted to drop out and I was just having a bit of a meltdown was because it was just a shock to the system to get to UIL and not be like, yeah, I've got this project in the bag, like being given things that just didn't feel comfortable. And even when I was doing graphic design, I remember like sometimes them debriefs being so open that it was almost too much freedom and not always feeling like you're doing the best, having the best outcome or doing the making the best thing, or, you know, doing a project that they're going to use to show as an example of really good work. So that was a bit scary. So I think already I was like shaken out of my comfort zone because it was now actually trying to figure it out and actually trying to be good in the real world rather than being good in that sort of like protected bubble that I was in. It's strange because, of course, in many ways I'm disadvantaged, but I do speak from a place of privilege in that it's not really a privilege though, is it? It's just more of circumstance because my mum wasn't really overbearing. And I think that's massively because she couldn't afford to be. She worked a lot and she wasn't around. I pretty much did everything on my own from all the GCSEs I picked and all the study and everything. I did it on my own. My mum really, I don't think she had any idea how I was doing in school. She just always assumed I was doing well because that thing of I naturally did well, even in academic subjects. And my academic subjects are on track. And then my art and design is going well. So it's just like, you know, Anthea's going to do well. She's going to come home with good grades. So I think no one was really watching out for me. And that same thing happened in sick form. In fact, when I had dropped out for those 2 weeks at UAL, my mum had no idea because she was away. And I was staying alone in the house because I think she was away for... She had gone to go see my grandma who was quite ill at the time. So, you know, I was in that circumstance where I was kind of raising myself. And so when people have that thing of, you know, what did your parents say? I was kind of, this is the reality of kind of being from a background like mine, that to a level you are your own parent. No one's, it helps you because it gives you the freedom to explore. But it's also a bit sad that the reality is that no one's going to tell you no or yes. You just have to guess if you're doing the right thing. So I was really going by gut instinct.
I mean, like you said, it's like there's a positive and negatives to both of that, isn't there? Like you can carve your own path, but at the same time, it's, you know, would have been great as well to have support. Not that your mum wasn't supportive, but like you said, she was just busy. Yeah. But despite all that, I mean, you landed some pretty great roles and jobs that I mentioned. So DNAD, New Blood, you worked with Pitch Magazine, you've worked with Grunt Magazine. Maybe you can talk about some of your experiences and what you've taken from those, because you've obviously, in a short amount of time, carved your path and found your way. And I know you're still working on that, we all are, but, you know, like, talk me through how that all went, because it sounds like, you know, you dropped out of university because you realized, when I say drop out, that's the wrong term, actually. You left university because you knew it wasn't right for you and you decided to do something else. So then, like, what was the plan of action from there?
I think there's a through line in my career where there are parts determination and will, and also I think it's all very much fueled by a genuine, you've got to be authentically interested and passionate about what you're doing. And I think that's also why probably things I could have pursued in the more academic lane, and I could have taken some of those things serious, and sometimes I think, why didn't I? But I just don't think I would have been as good at it because I didn't care about it. You have to actually care about what you're doing. Like I said, there was no manual telling, or there was nothing, there was no indicator or anything measurable to tell me that I was doing the right thing. So therefore, I had to be authentically passionate and interested about the things I was getting into. And I think that's really the through line. So I think that's the thing that really pushed me. But also sometimes I think about this concept of finding a way to put together a story about the times that I effed up, because I think it's such a thing of being, you know, when we speak to people saying like, you did so well at this, how did you do that? You did so well at this, how did you do that? And to be honest, I would be so much further if I had done this. I had been so much further. But I think it's just putting the humanity back into it and just saying, you know, it's actually very much okay to have messed up, because I was probably, so let's say I was probably given 10 chances and I probably messed up 5 of those and did well at 5 of them. And when you look back, you're like, you've done so well, you know, like you've done all this and this and this. And it's like, yeah, I've done well. And that's absolutely fine. I'm not saying that I needed to have done well at all 10 things, because that's literally a part of the journey. But it's just acknowledging that, you know, yeah, I've been given opportunities that I've done well at. But I also wouldn't have done well if I wasn't given so many opportunities or people didn't believe in me. It's also, it's, I think it's that community and ecosystem. It's lucky chances. It's also a certain level of luck. I mean, just because I come from a less advantaged background or whatever it is, doesn't mean you also can't have a level of luck and favor from people that see you and just for some reason believe in you. And I think that's also part of my, what's kind of built my ethos with Podricate and doing those things. So I think that's, if I'm putting together a little bit of a potion of the things that have helped me, it's those things combined.
No, I think that's a really great way of looking at it, because I mean, I have had so many fuck ups in my life, you know, and I don't necessarily see them as horrendous. I think when I was younger, you know, a bit older than you, but when I was younger, I used to have a lot of shame with those mess ups and those fuck ups. Like I used to just carry them around like a big load of baggage, like, oh my God, I really fucked that up or whatever. But as I've gotten older, and I love that you're way ahead of me with this, that that is just part of the journey. And sometimes those mess ups actually provide another opportunity that you wouldn't have been able to access or see or meet someone or whatever. So I totally get they're all part of the journey. So as much as I'm bigging up all your successes, I'll acknowledge that you've had some fuck ups. Maybe you can talk about like, what was one of the opportunities that was really like positive for you and you were like, oh, you know, this is great. Because like I said, you worked with some kind of, you know, industry heavyweights, and which is great. And in addition to all those things that you've mentioned that we, you know, we aren't talking about, but I'd love to hear more about one of those ones that, you know, your choice. So of what you want to talk about.
I don't know how often I speak about this one, actually, so this is a nice one to go on. So when I first started working with Sherry Collins from Pitch Magazine, the way that I came about working with her was through a lady called Nadia Powell. And I had met Nadia before, so this kind of a combination of that, like, fucking up and also something that was amazing. So I had met Nadia Powell before through Tolu. So Tolu Ferrinto was the bartender who used to work with me at that bar job. He's the person that was doing the entrepreneurship with Mediacom, etc. So I met Nadia through Tolu, and Nadia had had me on a photo shoot for as a runner. And I think for that photo shoot, I turned up about half an hour late. And that was one of the things I remember like kicking myself about and being like, why are you late to things? It's so embarrassing. And I think Nadia knew that I had a tendency to be late from other like things that I'd had before. I was quite young at this stage, but anyways, even though I had messed up on her shoot, I think Sherry was looking for somebody, you know, to assist her with Pitch Magazine. She just needed someone that was all around assistant that could do publishing assistant work and production assistant work and just sort of like just assist Pitch Magazine. And Nadia put my name forward. So that was really exciting because I didn't expect it. So I get the text and, you know, Sherry and I speak, and she says the first thing that she needs me to help her with is, oh no, she just needed me on for a one-off event at first. And the one-off event was Pitch 100 Super Women, and it was the first ever year. I think this is like 2017. And I went along the day before, I think it was at Publicis, and I went along to like help set it up. And then the next day was the actual event. I remember I wore these crushed velvet jogger pants and these Reeboks and then a white like crossover top. It was a very funky outfit. I still love it, but very funky. And then I went to this event that was to celebrate these like amazing women advertising. And there were just an array of women speaking about their achievements, just speaking as sort of like empowered, intelligent, you know, accomplished women from different backgrounds. And that was just like, so exciting to see, because I had been in the industry at that stage for like, well, not even in the industry. I had been trying my luck or trying to do things for about a year and a half. So the Great British Diversity Experiment was at the beginning of 2016. I think between that time now, what have I done? I've done the graphic design internship. I've done, well, sorry, work experience. I've done another work experience at MillenMoe. I've done, I think, some work experience at a UX UI place. That was a bit random. And just, you know, trying to still find opportunities. So I think I've done a handful of things. And now I've gone to Pitch 100 Superwomen. And that was just so exciting to see. It was just a really exciting, just left me so inspired. I think after that, Sherry was like, oh, we're going to go to an agency party. I can't remember which, not agency, it was like a production house party. I can't remember which production house, but I jumped in the back of a cab with her and I was with these other ladies who were like, you know, real boss women, and they were like working women. It was so exciting. We were driving around the city in a black cab, and then we got to another production house and I was speaking to all these people and having drinks. And it was just such a, like a, I'm with my people moment. So I remember that being a real aha moment, being really exciting, feeling like I had kind of like, you know, arrived. So yeah, that's one opportunity, and that's how, what started my experience, my work with Sherry Collins, just carried on from there.
Amazing. I mean, I love Sherry, I love Pitch Magazine as well, it's so awesome. So, and I also love, yeah, that, you know, that energy of being with incredibly talented and courageous women was like, yeah, the thing for you, like, these are my people, I've arrived.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. All right, I would love to talk about Podjucate now. You've mentioned it a few times. I mentioned it in the intro. So I'm wondering if you can tell me why you decided to found it and kind of, you know, give us a little flavour of what people can find on it.
I decided to found Podjucate because I think at the time I started, I was still quite an avid podcast listener. I just really love podcasts, and I remember having some sort of like almost epiphany moments of podcasts when I first found them. I think when you first start listening to podcasts, you can just have such, and you find the one that's for you, you can just have such a moment, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this content is available to me. I don't know what it is. It's just so different from YouTube or any other sort of media platform. I really don't know what it is. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but I remember listening to a podcast with a lady called Cyan Anderson. I think, she does lots of things within like music and that kind of thing. And she was being interviewed by a guy called Chucky Online. I remember hearing her interview and just thinking, wow, Cyan's amazing. She had been sort of like working and hustling since she was 15. And I just found it really like amazing, the amount of things she had done. I remember hearing that sort of content and just remembering how much it had left a print on me, or how much it had made me excited, thinking, you know what, yeah, you get that buzz, like, tomorrow I'm going to work really hard, I'm going to do something amazing. Just like, even though sometimes those things are like short-lived, or you might be a little bit of a phase, I still think they're moments in time, and they do stay with you to a certain level. So I remember, like, in terms of the format, that like kind of, that resonated with me. And then in terms of my personal podcast, I think I just wanted to do something. I was still very much at a level of, you know, I'm so excited and about things I'm finding out. And if I were to go back to my foundation stages, I wouldn't even know these things were available for me to find out. So I just felt so selfish holding on to the information. I really wanted my younger self and anyone that could relate to that to have the opportunity to find out about all the things I was finding out about. I wanted them to have that access. I wanted them to have that moment where they're hearing from the people they aspire to be among, be like, whatever it is. And I really think that access to information or the conversations, because a lot of my building my career was also just conversations. Some of them went places, some of them didn't. But having the access to be a fly on the wall and hear those conversations just projects your career so much more. Like, if I were younger and I was into these conversations with a whole, you know, season or two of these different professionals, it would just change so much. It'd give me so much more insight. I really was believing that, you know, cliche, knowledge is power, insight is the key. And just like, it puts you in a disadvantaged place when, you know, you've got the insight. And also something that kind of made me more passionate about sharing the information is that when I first came in the industry, there were so many things about the landscape of the industry and the lingo that people were using that I didn't understand. And there were things being said to me that sort of people didn't stop to ask me if I knew what they were saying. And it was a lot of guessing and figuring out, or messing up once, twice, three times before understanding, or just taking so long to build that mind map. And that was a bit of like something that slows me down. And I just think that if I'm having these conversations and I'm explaining layman's terms, or trying to really break down, trying to really help you build the map of what the industry is, because like I said, it's not taught in schools. these are not traditional jobs. There are so many like convoluted parts to the industry, or like, you know, just really confusing structures to, like, even the term agency, which is quite an American thing. I remember saying agency to my mum one time, her being like, what? And being like, oh, sorry, agency is company in advertising speak, but I don't know why. It's, you know, things like that. And just saying agency, 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 and expecting that young people know what that means without stopping to explain to them what that is. I just didn't want them to be at that disadvantage. I wanted to give them the information early. So I thought, if there's 10 people, you know, that it changes the, it helps them a little bit in starting their career or navigating, then I'm happy to not keep the information for myself and just put it out there and just, you know, make it accessible.
Yeah, I love that. And I couldn't agree more. It's like, you're definitely the whole thinking behind Greater Than 1% is there's so many creative careers out there that I'm always gobsmacked when I come across a new one. It's like, what the hell does that person do? And it's like, and that was the thing. There's so many jobs that I would have loved to have explored when I was younger. And like, then you realize like, oh, I probably would have been good at that. Didn't know it existed.
Yeah.
Or didn't know the route, or, you know.
There's so many roles that are still not going to have a degree, a specific degree for, but there's roles that people are qualified for that they don't know they're qualified for. There's things like you're saying, you and I can go to a different agency and see the structure they have and think, oh, I didn't know that that was an available job. Or there's people that say, you meet and you say to them, oh, how did you get into this job? And they say, oh, I used to work in this department and I just applied for this, not really knowing what it meant, and I just learned on the way. But sometimes you don't know that's even an opportunity. I mean, that's also part of life, because, you know, we're in an evolving world, which is absolutely fine. But in terms of the basic things like a creative duo or what a producer does, it took me a while to understand that I'm now a producer. But I think if you listen to an episode of Poduke, actually, with Bessia Akaba, she was a post producer. So she works in a post house. I said something to her and she was like, no, she had to correct me because I really didn't understand the difference between a post-producer and a producer. Such a small, well, it's not a small thing in the job, but it's a small thing in the term that can just get lost. And who's going to tell, if you want diversity and want different people coming to the industry, who's going to stop and tell them? Like, who's going to make the time to, you know, really hold their hand a little bit? Because things do need hand-holding a little bit.
Absolutely. And that is the beauty of podcasts, right? I love podcasts as well because it's really intimate. It's almost like a one-to-one conversation. You put the headphones in your ears and it's someone that's really close to you. And yeah, I listen to podcasts, well, all the time. I'm like quite obsessed. I go through phases of like, you know, education ones, then I'll be like true crime, and then it'll be like another genre. But yeah. So I also teach on a creative producing course at Essex University. One of the first things I do is like I put up all the producing roles that, you know, I can ever think of. Everything from post to creative to executive to location. And I'm like, so tell me what each of these roles do. And, you know, like you can see people scratching their head, and it's like there's just so many roles that have producer attached to it, and they're all so different. I mentioned in the intro, and I think you talked about having conversations just then talking about Poducate. And I'm wondering if you'd like to talk a little bit more about what I talked about, you being made redundant during the pandemic and you being like, no, I'm going to do something about this because of everything that was happening around the same time. Because I think that's really, really important. And I think for anyone, young, mid-career or later career, like knowing your value and going, hold on, you're as a company saying one thing, and I'm going to challenge you on that. And I just love that you did that. I love that you knew your worth. I love that you were tenacious and that the result was the desired outcome. So I'd love it to hear more from you about that.
The thing that really drove me at that stage was sheer desperation. Sheer desperation and exhaustion is the words. To paint the picture here, that's 2020. I've now been trying to find my space or my place in the industry since the beginning of 2016. I've done it work experiences. I freelanced with Sherry for about 2 years. So with my job with Sherry at Pitch Magazine, it was sort of weekly bookings. So I did work with her most weeks, but you know, it's a thing of I'm booked in to do 2 or 3 days a week, and then in the evenings, that's only 2 or 3 days of work. And then in the evenings, I've got to then sometimes go straight from Pitch Magazine to go work at a bar. I'm working at a bar with a very particular clientele that can be very frustrating at times. You know, I've had people shout at me. I've literally been brought to tears before because I've had people gang up at me, shout at me, you know, underhanded racial comments. I've been sexually harassed while working. I've been through it. You know, I've been working for there for 6 years now. Like, I've been through it. At first, when I came into the industry and I was sort of working with Cherry Collins, at first I thought I wanted to be a creative, the person that comes up with the ideas. I've gone through that phase and realised I'm a producer now. I think before I got the job for Hogarth, I think I did like four or at least three or four different like trial days or interview processes. Like, I mean, that doesn't seem like a lot, but to get three or four trial days and then and interview processes, you have to at least apply for a lot more. I've worked, like, bear in mind that I'm here saying that I've worked at DNAD, like, I've done a fixed term contract before at DNAD, like, I thought that I had so much offer and I'm not getting things. To even get my role at Hogarth, I was scouted for one first job and then I was told that they decided to go with someone who had more experience within broadcasting for a production assistant role at Hogarth. The first time that's what happened. The second time, they wanted to interview me, but I didn't see the email because the email was in my junk. And then when I did see it, I was going on holiday. And the only day I could do, the person who was going to interview me was out of office. So basically, timing didn't messed up and then I was going away. So I go away now to go see family in Ghana. I'm in Ghana for 3 weeks and then I miss a flight. I'm out there for two more weeks, all sorts. So I've really been through things, you know, I've like struggled to get a job. I'm literally struggling for like 4 months or something along those lines. I come back from Ghana in January and then the bar arguing me because I had taken time off for Christmas. You're not meant to take time off because it's a busy time. And they've like cut my shifts down to one day that week. And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to eat. You know, I don't know how I'm going to make money. And then that week, I just ended up getting a front of house, a runner role at Hogarth because I was still in contact with them and I decided to, you know, get my foot in the door, just go a step lower, go for front of house runner. I decided that, you know, I'd go in there and then I'd get my foot in the door and then I'd move up to moving image and production assistant really fast, etc. So that's my idea. And now I'm there front of house and then a pandemic happens and you have to work from home after 5 weeks. My role is kind of like, to be honest, my role was redundant. So it wasn't completely redundant. It was redundant because the runner part of my role wasn't there anymore. I wasn't able to service the edit suites. I wasn't able to do the service clients in person as I was doing in the office. But because I'm overqualified for the role, I was doing things like assisting the bookings coordinator. I was like picking up things really fast and assisting the producers and like almost production assistant kind of things. Things I do now in my role is kind of doing for them. I was doing as much as I can, so I was like adapting my role. So I'm feeling like, you know, I'm doing my best to make the best out of the situation. So now I've set the picture of how much sort of like I've struggled to get here and then how much I'm trying to, you know, adapt to the situation. I passed my 3 month probation, not that anyone said anything to me, but the 3 month mark went by and then it's the 4th month now. And one day I get a meeting sort of being like, you know, let's talk. And I was a bit like, oh, I hope there's nothing bad, haha. And there was no response to that. The result of that meeting is that I'm told I'm going to be made redundant. And then I'm just sort of like absolutely shattered, absolutely like, you know, just shaking and feeling like, what else can I do? Because I've been trying so hard. I've struggled so much. Like I literally went through such a, I don't want to say a depression, but a dark time through that 4 months that I'm sort of being rejected left, right and center. I've like, you know, been on this whirlwind holiday which I've gotten stuck somewhere and all the rest of it, I've come back to no job and then finally gotten a job and been so excited to finally have my foot in the door, and after 4 months I'm being told that you don't have a job anymore. When I see the email then following up sort of being like, you know, we back diversity or we aid diversity within the company and making sure that we extend opportunities that people don't get the opportunity, it just lights a fire under my ass. You know, it was so, I was told I was going to be made redundant. It was such bad timing too on their part. I was told I was going to be made redundant on the 2nd of June, 2020. And if anyone remembers what that is, that was Blackout Tuesday, the day that people were sort of like, it was one of the first waves where people were posting the black squares on their feeds and sort of saying, you know, we stand in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. No more, like, we're not standing for this anymore. There needs to be action. They were calling for companies to take action. And then on the 3rd of June is when we got the email saying, you know, we're one of the companies that stand in solidarity. So it was just enraging, to be honest. You're there, you're watching this sort of thing hold out on social media, and you're very used to be honest, as a Black person, having these things happen and then going to work and not really talking about it or really caring about it. So you can't accept your fate that that's going to be normal. But then this time, for some reason, the company do see that it's their place to speak up, but then it's not reflecting in your own reality within the company. So I was just enraged. I was also coming from a place of, I had nothing to lose. I was, you know, I felt very much that I had the right. I felt very, like, exhausted through the journey that I had already been through. And once I typed up the email, I remember sending it to Shani, also Tolu, to have a look at. And they both sort of, like, gave me whatever opinions they had on it. And I sent it off. And then I remember Shani saying to me, how did it make you feel? Like, whatever happens, I just want to see, I just want you to make sure that you felt happy about it. And I said to her, it makes me feel, to be honest, really fucking powerful. I think even now, looking back at that, it was almost like a letter to myself. It was like detailing all of the things that made me an asset beyond just being, you know, an asset because of diversity and culture reasons. Like, put that to the side. I was there detailing my actual skills, work experience, you know, and the associations, you know, the association and network rather that I had with the industry, and just like really batting for myself and saying, actually, I'm sorry, I'm in a role where I'm overqualified and I feel that you could really benefit from having me here. And I do think it would be a loss for yourself to let go of me. And also, it does not reflect what you're saying. So I think we should have a conversation about that. And I felt very, you know, justified in everything I was saying. It wasn't just saying, hey, keep me because I'm Black. It was just basically standing up for myself in the way that no one else had for me before, do you know?
I love that. And thank you for sharing that and being so open, because like, it's definitely a lot of emotional like feeling there as well. And I totally love that. I totally love, and I totally saw it like that. Like, I am overqualified for this job. I've got all these skills. You're talking about supporting diversity, but you're doing the absolute complete opposite. So I'm holding you account. And I just loved that you did that. And like, yeah, it's so awesome. And I should also say that Shani is Shani Smears, who was episode 87, the last episode of series 2, who connects us. So yeah, big shout out Shani. I love her.
Also, just I want to add on to that story, because I think often I tell it from the perspective of in the moment and how I felt, but also just to reflect on the company in them keeping me on and stuff. I did have a conversation with the CEO. So, you know, he linked me with a person who put me into my new role, which was new business, and they did the work to like actually search, ask me what I was interested in, search for a new place. But also after that, the CEO then had a conversation with me to catch up and stuff. I think the thing about this thing is, you're not always going to be correct. We call it systemic for a reason. It's taught and it's very much, it's supported and backed up by an ongoing pattern of behaviours. So sometimes at the time of it, they might not realise the faults, but I think it's commendable at least for a company to be able to be vulnerable straight away and be proactive rather than reactive. Because what they could have done was deny me and being, you know, wrong and strong. And then I would have taken it further. It become a bigger thing and then become a shaming thing. And then they could have ended up releasing one of those statements saying, hey, we did really bad back then, but we aim to do better. In the moment that they were faced with their wrongdoing, rather than being defensive, they actually, you know, they sought to do something about it and then at least tried to take some steps to build an actual relationship or get to know me or, you know, really take interest in me. I mean, it is one event and there's still work to be done and things to be done. But I do commend the fact that they were like, once they were told about their issues, they tried. And I would say that Richard Glasson particularly was quite a personable person once we got to be acquainted.
Yeah, and that's great to hear. And, you know, I'm so happy that that was the case and that they took efforts and not just passing you on somewhere either, just to keep you in employment. They asked you and they involved you in that process, etc. But I mean, there is a lot more work that needs to be done. You know, like, that is one really positive incident, and I totally acknowledge that. So I'm going to ask you, you've worked with loads of different people, loads of different organizations. You've had, as you said, lots of successes, but also some F-ups, to use your term. I'm just wondering, what's the best advice you've ever been given in relation to kind of career?
I mean, I'm not sure if this is the best advice. It's something that I would like to share, because it's something that I'm still trying to learn. Shani always tells me to be more optimistic and not to assume. I've spoken to a therapist before, and they've told me that sometimes when you grow up quite independent, you tend to do this thing where your truth is the whole truth, because basically you've had to fend for yourself, so you tend to come up with conclusions or your truths quite quickly, and then that's, you stick to it. So what I'm trying to say is, for example, let's say I met you, Renee, on a day where, you know, you were quite tired and I was telling you about something and then you weren't very receptive at the time, I would then be like, say to myself that, you know, Renee's not interested in the things I have to say, Renee's not a very open person, Renee's, and I would just come to that conclusion just to sort of protect myself, because to me that's a practical and logical thing to do. So I like to like try and work things out quickly and come to the truth, and that's the work where I'm stuck on. But the thing that Shani tells me a lot is, you know, she always tells me not to assume, like, you don't know that. I remember there's times where I've said something to her and I've said that, well, I didn't do that thing, or I didn't speak to that person, or I didn't send that email. And she'll say, but why didn't you do that? And I said, because I met them and they said this, this, this to me. She said, did they say to you, I do not want to hear anymore? And I'll say, no, but they didn't. She said, and she'll say to me, don't make that assumption. Don't make that assumption. Have the conversation, put yourself out there, you know, be more optimistic. And then if they say no, then you know from there.
I love that. I've talked quite a lot in previous episodes as well. Like, I'm in therapy, have been for years, and I was also very independent when I was growing up. And I've definitely, that's been a journey for me, learning that lesson. And another thing is like, don't take things personally. You know, to your example, if I was tired and not like overly enthusiastic, don't take that as like, well, they're not interested. It's not personal. They just could be tired. Like, you know, like those assumptions. I mean, I'm laughing, but because I do it as well. And it's just, I feel like a nice little bonding moment with you over some form of dysfunction. But anyway. Yeah. Cool. It is good advice though, right? And I do love that. And Shani is so optimistic. That's what I love about Shani, is she's just so like gentle and goes with the flow, but like so laser focused. All right. Can you tell me what you love about what you do?
What I love about what I do is that I think I used to write in, you know, that part of your CV where it's like whatever, the opening statement or the opening paragraph. I always write, I like being part of something. I like making things happen, making outcomes is the thing I would always say. And I think I wonder why it took me so long to realize I'm a producer. I just like making it happen. And I love sometimes feeling like, no one could make it happen the way you do. There's lots of producers. Everyone has their own style. And I think the nice thing about producing is that you don't have to be the genius that comes up with the idea. You just have to be the person that really kind of refines it and make, I've just thought of a saying that might be a bit cheesy, but I think it might work. I think the producer is the pressure that makes the diamond, you know? I feel like you're given the stone in the rough, and then the producer puts the pressure on and makes it like glisten. You know, you really make it a final idea, because sometimes there's things that the creative might not have thought about, or, you know, the team might have not thought about, or there's ways to enhance it. And I just think I really like making it happen and making it beautiful and just saying, yeah, I brought that to life.
So how do you fuel your creativity? How do you keep yourself topped up so you can keep coming up with those ideas, polishing up that diamond?
How do I fuel my creativity? I just think there's so many ways that I can improve in terms of, you know, being more plugged in and looking at things to inspire myself. I feel like, you know, I'm no longer in that place where I listen to lots of podcasts. And so sometimes I think I could be more adventurous, but I feel that if you're, I'll go back to this thing, if you're genuinely excited and passionate about things, some things will find you. And there's things, you know, that I draw upon from. I feel I've always been really excited about infusing my heritage, culture, and things that influenced me growing up. I feel like they're the things that are just, those are the kind of projects that just are brilliant. I feel like authentic projects that reflect, you know, something like, just popped into my head, that series, Derry Girls. Just, I love when people have true experiences or things that you can see they're passionate about. The output's just amazing and resonates with audiences because it comes from a real thing. So I think, you know, drawing upon real experiences in creativity, like something like No Signal Radio, something like that where they're passionate about the radio that, you know, black young kids in the UK grew up on, and they take that passion and then they also modernize it. That's definitely something that I try and do in terms of coming up with ideas. I mean, there's ideas that I have that I've had for ages, and it comes from a place of taking things you've grown up on and then modernizing it and making it beneficial for the audience in a way.
Which is a beautiful segue into what's coming up for you. What's next? What are some passion projects that you're potentially working on, or what you're aiming to do?
So this might be giving away the secrets a little bit, but so with Podgercake, something to mention is that the episodes are still up. There's a season one and there's a season two, but I don't seek to record a season three. And that's also something that I like. I admire you. 89 episodes is bloody amazing. I can't even believe it. I didn't manage that.
I have to say, series three is it for me. So, but yeah, we'll get over 100 and then, yeah, and I'll leave all the stuff up. But yeah, it takes a lot of work, as you can appreciate, right?
Yeah, I often say to people, I tell people the things I'm doing, and then once I finish, I go, yeah, but I hate working too hard and I hate doing lots of things. I just accidentally end up doing these things because I like all of them. Like, I do things I like, so then I end up doing lots of things. Yeah, I don't seek to do any more episodes, but something I do seek to do is take Podgercake in a new direction, where there's going to be a rebrand, there's going to be a change of name. I'm still figuring out the way to do that, but the content is going to be different. It's not going to be podcasts. That stuff will still be available, but it's going to be Reels, Instagram content, TikTok content that gives, you know, the same audience an insight into the advertising industry in a different format, and a very exciting format that kind of draws upon something that I think a lot of my generation are familiar with, which is MTV Cribs. And without giving away any more, that's what I want to do with Podgercake. In terms of my career, you know, production assistant at Iris at the moment, which is an advertising agency. We work on such great brands, Starbucks, Adidas. I've worked for quite a bit at Adidas already. So I'm still there trying to learn even more about advertising production in particular. So now I'm trying to do what I've been trying. Well, now I'm trying to build that sort of foundation of a career skill set within advertising producing. And then I'll see where I go with that, because I do want to go, of course, carry on being a producer, but possibly at different kinds of agencies, possibly on the brand side or media company side or in a different country. I like the fact that that side's a little bit open. I feel like my actual career is a little bit open. I'm becoming a bit more adventurous now that I'm in a more comfortable place in my career. So that's something that I hope for. And then this year, I'm again producing GWOP's The Blacklist. This is my third year producing, but fifth year working on it. So yeah, you were correct that I produced it twice, 2 years before. But before that, I had like worked on it. That was a whole thing. So the way I sort of got ingrained into that project was similar to the way my entire career has gone, you know. Yes, I'm producing for the third year on the fifth year of The Blacklist. Plans to do really exciting and big things with that. And that's going to be brilliant. And then I also work on a candle and diffuser line, so HomeSense line. So it was founded in Ghana and it does really well in Ghana. It's still yet to sort of pick up steam in the UK and it's still figuring it out. They're the main things. I think maybe, you know, room for some other exciting opportunities, but hopefully nothing that exhausts me too much.
Oh, it has been so gorgeous talking to you. You're such an incredible person and beautiful energy. And thank you for being so open and honest and like sharing like some vulnerable moments. I really, really appreciate it. One thing I ask everyone before they leave is there a career or job in the creative industries you've always been curious as to, like, what the hell do they do? And that way I could possibly find someone in that role and get them on. And then the second thing is there a woman or person who identifies as non-binary that you would like to recommend I reach out to get on the show?
So a career role that I find interesting within the creative industries might be a bit left field. So I don't think it's not advertising at all. It's media. It's not that far away from my role, but producing radio shows. I think radio is interesting to know because I think that's something that people don't really inquire about a lot. So definitely producing radio shows or something along those lines. Maybe even what roles exist within radios other than producing it. I can't really think of, apart from hosting a producer, I don't know what other roles there are. And then a woman would be, there's a lady who I kind of just know from online, similar network in terms of like, you know, the people will know. Her name is Lordina. I only know her, her last name is Jamin. Yeah, she works over at No Signal Radio, and I just think that all the ladies at No Signal just seem like really cool.
I think I have like secret ambitions to be a radio producer or host or something. I think most podcasters must have it somewhere in their psyche. So it's like perfect. That is brilliant. I will definitely reach out to her. Like I said, it's been so amazing having you. Thank you again for your time today.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. Please do subscribe to where you get your podcasts to make sure you're up to date with any new episode drops. And you can also follow us on Instagram at GreaterThan11. A huge thank you to Eden Richards, who creates all Greater Than 11% artwork and edits this beautiful podcast.